Techonomics on KGO 810. Welcome to this week's edition of Techonomics. Now that the presidential election is passed, what is Silicon Valley to make of any change to immigration policies? Host Jason Middleton talks with a prominent Silicon Valley entrepreneur and academic about skilled workers, immigration reform, and any impact on the tech industry. Then, to lighten the mood a little, there's a tech look at a social profit company that helps bring music education to children, regardless of their personal economic circumstances. We'll see if it's true that little kids rock and how one company is leading the way by sponsoring music education. Finally, a figure from the past and the present, Alan Greenspan. A new biography takes a firm but fair look at the legacy of one of the lions of the financial sector. All that and a little more on this week's Techonomics, starting now on KGO 810.
Hello and welcome to this week's Techonomics. I am your host, Jason Middleton. And this week, we're starting with no less than one of Silicon Valley's own calling out Silicon Valley for leaving an economic wasteland in its wake after it disrupts an industry.
I mean, this is what the problem is with Silicon Valley, that we live in this utopia. We think everything will be okay. Hey, let us do all the damage we can. Let us get filthy rich, and the world will be better off because we're filthy rich.
When a lumber company cuts down trees, in most cases they are required to plant more trees to replace the felled ones. That tenet does not hold with Silicon Valley. It's not true when robots replace humans in manufacturing. It's not true when automated driving machines replace taxi drivers and long-haul truckers. The name of this game seems to be disruption without representation, and it's taking a national toll.
Silicon Valley absolutely adores disruption, and most human beings don't. That's what we're all about here in Silicon Valley. I mean, companies are started with the very idea of disrupting some existing company or business or industry or whole sector, and those kinds of things happen, and people's lives get upended, and companies go out of business, and people lose jobs and all that. And, you know, we forget. I mean, we just got reminded. The vast majority of people really don't like drastic change. Takes them a while to come along. And there's been so much disruption so fast. I look at what happened as a big yell of stop from 56 million people.
That was Kevin Maney. He's a senior columnist at Newsweek magazine. He's also the author of several books on Silicon Valley and the tech industry as a whole. My entire interview with Kevin Maney is available at kgoradio.com/techonomics. But for our discussion right now, we have a Silicon Valley entrepreneur and investor who is also a distinguished professor at Carnegie Mellon University. He's also a professor of engineering at Duke University, and he's a columnist at The Washington Post. And he's concerned with Silicon Valley's role, to say the least.
I'm Vivek Wadhwa. I'm a distinguished fellow at Carnegie Mellon Engineering in Silicon Valley.
Let's start at the beginning. Let's start with Election Day. I was reading your pre-election Washington Post column, and it looks like that maybe Election Day was a surprise. You were hoping that the American public would vote a different way. Take me up from October 14th, when that one published in the WAPO, up until the day after Election Day. What happened in between there?
Okay, you know, I've just finished the manuscript of a book called Driver in the Driverless Car. It talks about the choices we must make to make sure that we head towards Star Trek versus Mad Max. So I talk about the fact that we have widening inequity, that there are lots of risks with technology, and that we're also becoming dependent on technology. I said, if we don't, you know, go the other way, we're going to head towards Mad Max. I've been working on this book for the last 2.5 years. I never in my wildest dreams imagined that Mad Max would be coming here in the year 2016, that the gulf between the rich and the poor and the haves and the have-nots have grown so wide that they would vote for a despot, for a tyrant, basically, rather than the establishment. This is the danger that we face because of technology advances and because we haven't figured out how to distribute prosperity yet.
Well, because honestly, President-elect Trump leveraged the existing technology to a degree that we had never seen before. So is it fair that we should have seen this coming?
We couldn't have seen this coming because, you know, just like when President Obama got elected, he used social media also. It was in its infancy. He used it for good, basically. He used it in a positive way to motivate people and to raise money and things like that. Donald Trump realized the dark side of technology. He realized that it gives him the ability to spread hate and fear, and he can spread misinformation. And that, you know, with the way social media is, that you end up in small groups in which you're cut off from everyone else, you could, you know, basically propagate garbage and get away with it. So he mastered the art of using the dark side of technology.
And he was not alone in this, because fake news on Facebook has come out as a 2-inch headline since Election Day. And even the CEO of Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg, originally thought it was a crazy idea that this had impact. But BuzzFeed proved that the engagement for fake news was higher closer to Election Day than reality, real news. So, again, they leveraged it, but they had help leveraging it, too.
Well, the tech industry knows that it's creating problems. It just remains in denial. I mean, you know, the next big thing is going to be when Uber gets its self-driving cars working and starts taking drivers off the road. There are going to be millions of people who lose their jobs. They're going to pretend that, hey, we didn't know this would happen. We didn't know there was great so unrest. We didn't know that unemployed people would go on strike and start burning down buses and so on. But, you know, that's going to happen. I mean, this is what the problem is with Silicon Valley, that we live in this utopia. We think everything will be okay. Hey, let us do all the damage we can. Let us get filthy rich. And the world would be better off because we're filthy rich.
Right.
That's a mindset here in Silicon Valley. I hate to be so critical here, but, you know, this is the common mindset in Silicon Valley, that we, you know, pretend everything will be okay. No, it won't be okay. There are consequences to our technologies. There are consequences to what we're doing. We have to now take responsibility for what we're creating.
When lumber companies go into a forest and cut it, they have to go behind and replant trees to the amount that they take out. Silicon Valley has no such moral.
No, we think that we're innovating, we're bettering the world, we're better than everyone else, and that everyone else is dumb and stupid, and this is how we treated the rest of America. I mean, you've got to realize that I, too, was part of this. I didn't realize that there was so much resentment in America. This election was eye-opening for me, that I realized that it isn't just racism. Yes, there's some racism. We've given birth to new demons and given legitimacy to the white nationalists and so on. But there's more depth than that. They're also good people. Now, you know, normal people who have good moral values have voted for Donald Trump. It's not the people. It's the fact that we are out of touch with the people, that we don't realize the impact over here. And this is really a prelude of things to come. We have to realize that we have to take responsibility, that along with power, which is what technology gives us, comes responsibility. We haven't realized in Silicon Valley yet.
Okay. We're on the other side of Election Day. You're right. Some of the rhetoric on the campaign trail from President-elect Trump did point towards demagoguery. So let's look at something that is literal. And he campaigned on jobs and delivering jobs after the election. How does tech play into that platform of job creation for President-elect Trump?
We are wiping out the jobs en masse. I mean, the example I gave you was Uber, that Uber will have self-driving cars working within 2 or 3 years. Within 4 or 5 years, it'll start now rolling out self-driving cars all over the roads, and it's going to be wiping out hundreds of thousands of jobs. At the same time, Uber isn't just happy, you know, satisfied with taking out the taxi drivers. It's also now going after the trucking industry. So we have 3 million truckers in America who are going to begin to lose their jobs. All right. At the same time, now we have, if you look at the work that Google, Facebook, Microsoft, all of the tech companies are doing on artificial intelligence, it's amazing how fast it's advancing. If you look at Google's latest text-to-voice technology, it sounds like a human being, which means that within 3 or 4 years, we buy Amazon Echo and Google Home and so on. These are bots that talk to us. They're going to be talking to us like they're human beings.
Right.
We won't be able to tell the difference between human beings and these bots within 3 or 4 years, which means that all of these jobs we now have for call center workers, for customer support people, begin to disappear. The robots, if you look at the advance of robots, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, we were laughing at the DARPA challenge when we saw these robots falling over each other. They
right.
couldn't even walk a step or two without falling over. Now we're seeing videos of robots walking on one leg. I mean, that famous Google video in which the guy pushes the
yes.
robot and he just bounces back. Well, robots are now advancing to the point that they're becoming human-like. Give it 5 years and we'll have robots that cost $20,000 or $30,000 that can, you know, serve us like waiters do. I mean,
right.
maybe it's 10 years, but, you know, in the next few years, we'll have robots that can do the job, the manual jobs that human beings do. So now you're talking about millions more jobs disappearing. So who's responsible for this? We're creating it. We're going to benefit from it. The rich in Silicon Valley are going to get even richer. The filthy rich are going to get even filthier. I mean, so but the fact is, but we're not taking responsibility for our actions. We're not now worrying about the joblessness, worrying about job training programs, having discussions about how we can make the burden easier for people who are going to lose their jobs and coming up with new jobs that these people can take. We're not having those discussions.
You know, the video you mentioned right there, I believe it was Boston Robotics. They push the robot down. It's a bipedal robot. It stands back up. Then it walks out the door into the sunset, literally. And to me, that's just a robot overlord overtone to that video. I'll put a link up on Facebook.com/Techonomics Radio. Vivek, we have one last question for you on the jobs front. So if jobs is the main category, my subcategory would be immigration. And here in Silicon Valley, H-1B visas are a big deal. And I'm wondering how a potential President-elect Trump policy around this might affect Silicon Valley moving forward.
You know, this is the good news, actually, that Trump and the conservatives that he's working with, other than, you know, leave out Steve Bannon and the Ku Klux Klan and the, you know, the nutcases, the racists, the rest of them really are a moderate on skilled immigration. They support skilled immigration. Now, H-1Bs aren't the problem here. The problem here are green cards, because we have hundreds of thousands of people on H-1Bs who are waiting for green cards, and they're stuck in the companies they're working for. But I'm actually slightly optimistic that this problem may be fixed, that the new administration may be a lot more skilled immigrant friendly than the Democrats were, because for them it's all about business. It's all about giving companies what they want. So this might actually work out better than we expected. It's my guess right now.
So just for the audience's use case scenario here is somebody applies for an H-1B visa to come here. They do. They learn at Stanford or some other university. And then without a green card, they go back to their origin country and basically build a competing company.
Yep, that's happening more and more. I wrote a book about it called The Immigrant Exodus.
Yes, I remember that. We had you on the show for that one. You have a new book coming out early next year, The Driver in the Driverless Car. Did you have to rewrite the preface for that one?
Well, fortunately, the last few months I've been rewriting it, and when I saw what was happening, I actually wrote it so that I haven't had to change the book, because I talked about the extreme right and the extreme left and the widening gulf. I mean, even when I wrote it, I never anticipated that Donald Trump get elected, but nevertheless, the book discusses that, and then it discusses the technology choices we must make. I mean, I want everyone to read it, because it's for all of us now to make sure that we move towards Star Trek and not Mad Max, because we've seen the ugly side. We have to now start learning about these technologies and their impact, and we have to all come together to make sure that we drive them in the right direction, that we use them for good versus evil, and that we have this amazing future, which, and it's entirely possible. At the end of the day, and even at the end of the book, I'm very optimistic that we will build Star Trek. We will rise above this. We will learn from our mistakes. We will better the world. But that's what the book is about. And I encourage your listeners to pre-order it right now on Amazon.
Yes, absolutely. It comes out April the 3rd. Professor Wadhwa, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, my friend. Anytime.
That was Vivek Wadhwa. He's a distinguished professor at Carnegie Mellon University. He's also a professor of engineering at Duke University and a columnist at The Washington Post. For the most part, tech lives in this beautiful 9-county metroplex called the Bay Area, where the hyper-educated are hyper-ambitious and hyper-motivated to disrupt the status quo. And as a macro approach, that doesn't sound so bad. It sounds downright American, actually. But when entire industries are rendered topsy-turvy, when millions are losing jobs and no solutions are offered, well, that seeds despair. And people will do almost anything if they lack hope. And recently, somewhere around 50 million people did just that. Almost anything. Coming up after this short break, we lighten the mood a little with a feel-good story about kids and music education. I'm Jason Middleton. This is Techonomics. Please come on back.